There's a lot of news happening all around the world and right here at home. It's time to find out what's trending.
What's trending in Seattle?
So we've been talking about it over the course of the last week. The city council, with a vote of 9-0, decided to pass an Amazon head tax that doesn't just impact Amazon. It impacts a ton of businesses in and out of the Seattle area. And they did it despite the fact that well over a majority of those polled didn't support any aspect of the tax whatsoever. You'll remember that they had three versions out there. One was at $500, one was at $250, and one was what they ended up passing at $275. That is the tax per employee at certain businesses. Certain businesses making over $20 million before they pay their taxes, before they pay their payroll taxes. This on top of the B&O taxes that they're already paying. And no one was in favor of it because no one trusted the council to spend the money efficiently. Because we've seen tens of millions of dollars every single year get spent on the homelessness problem while homelessness has gotten worse. The 10-year plan to tackle homelessness, to end homelessness, resulted in worse homelessness. We have a city council that's enabling people to sleep wherever it is they want. And they end up committing despicable crimes in our neighborhoods. The enabling of people to use heroin wherever it is they want without any judgments nor treatment. That has spread. That's not a Seattle issue anymore, just like the homelessness issue. That's spread. We have the story of a boy in Everett, 3 years old. Get stuck by a used needle at a park. We had the woman who was on, the grandmother, who was on just a few weeks ago, near Shoreline, who, while going out on a trail with her grandkids and dogs, saw a ton of used needles just strewn about. This is all happening under the leadership of people like Mike O'Brien, Shama Sawant, Lorena Gonzalez, and now Seattle Mayor Jenny Durkin. And businesses have had it. They are done. They will no longer be abused. A group of businesses have gotten together and they're pushing a referendum. The referendum will overturn, if passed, the head tax. We talked with Saul Spady just an hour ago. He was on live. He is the grandson of Dick Spady, better known from Dick's Drive-In. They're making a hardcore push to make sure that you're out there signing their referendum so we can get this on the ballot and we can actually vote on it. So if you live in the city of Seattle, if you're someone who is sick and tired of the council going crazy overboard in their belief that you only have profits because we let you have profits, if you're sick of that, text the keyword head tax. It's one word, no spaces, head tax, to the number 1-800-465-8770. Text head tax to 1-800-465-8770. I'll send you a link to the No Seattle Head Tax Facebook page where you can show your support. You can even download the paperwork so you can sign your own signatures. You can go in your own office space. Talk to the folks who are actual residents of Seattle, who are voters here, and have them sign the petition. Let's get this on the ballot. Because there are a lot of people who are just sick and tired of what the city is becoming thanks to the work of the council.
I am sick and tired of what I'm seeing happen to my city. We all change jobs often, and I'm worried about what happens to me if I decide to change jobs a year from now.
People are worried. It's not going away. And it's not going to go away until you go after this job-killing tax.
We need to make sure that the jobs that we have stay here, number one, and that we also continue to attract jobs to come here.
I do feel like for the first time, there's a cultural shift happening. Because there's no doubt, you've got a lot of people in the Seattle area who are progressive, right? This is a city filled with progressives, filled with younger people who are progressives, are very loud and active. And for the most part, despite the fact that the council has been passing really, really, really bad bills, bad legislation that are negatively impacting these businesses, for the most part, they've been kind of silent, right? They're not putting out referendum after referendum after referendum. They didn't really do much on the minimum wage. They didn't do anything on secure scheduling. They didn't do anything on banning the box, which prevents them from looking on an application as to whether or not the person who wants a job committed a rape in their past. They griped a little bit, but they kind of just grin and bared it. Well, now they're starting to fight back. And I think they're starting to fight back because they're sensing from the actual public that voters are not behind the council on this. They were sick and tired of what has happened here on the case of homelessness, on the case of people who are doing drugs and just abusing the system. We are sick and tired of it. And because they sense that support from the community that they've not necessarily felt in the past, they're getting a little bit more audacious, and I love it. And I want you to help. Text the keyword head tax if you're a Seattle voter. You have to live here if you want to sign the petition. Send head tax, that keyword, one word, no spaces, head tax to the number 1-800-465-8770. I'll send you a link back so you can actually sign the petition, so you can actually support the petition, so you can actually do something about a council that's not just running Seattle into the ground, but running the entire region into the ground. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? Wait, what?
That's kind of my response to a story out of Texas. Now, to be fair, this story happened on the Thursday of last week, so it was before the shooting took place. But I thought it was an interesting context because there are lots of students and parents and administrators in Santa Fe, Texas, who are reeling after the massacre there, right? There are a lot of kids and adults who need some counseling because of the trauma that they experience. And you can take all politics out of it. You understand that what they did is deserving of our compassion and understanding and assistance. And yet I see at Texas Tech University, where supposed adults go, the Student Counseling Center has published a list of tips intended to help students cope with, quote, the current political climate. And as I'm looking over all of the tips, all this is about is catering to progressive students. I pulled this story from Campus Reform. They say the SCC, the Student Counseling Center, encourages any student has been, quote, impacted by oppression, end quote, of which, by the way, none of the students there have been impacted by oppression, to think about speaking with one of its counselors, and it offers a list of resources that the center says, quote, can be helpful in creating understanding, promoting healing, and fostering inclusivity. They write, notably, the resource catalog includes articles such as 101 Ways to Take Care of Yourself When the World Feels Overwhelming, Curriculum for White Americans to Educate Themselves on Race and Racism, and Self-Care in Times of Social Unrest. My favorite one, I think, is 12 Ways to Be a White Ally to Black People. Because in this article, it states, quote, white people who hate racism should work hard to become white allies. And it gives tips on how to do so. Now, we have legitimate needs for counseling right now, right? What happened in Santa Fe, that seems to me a legitimate need for counseling. You know what is not a legitimate need of counseling? Being upset that you live in a state where conservatives are. That you're upset that other people think differently than you. I know that that's hard to believe for some of these kids, but guess what? Your ideology is yours. And you're entitled to that ideology. I don't care necessarily what you believe. I find it alarming, however, that you need to seek counseling when you realize, oh, wow, other people think differently than I do? What? You mean they're not also progressives? Conservatives? Oh, they're all bigots. I go to a school with bigots. I need some help. That's what you're seeking counseling for. So I do hope that if there is a student today, for example, who's going in for some counseling because he or she is upset that there are students on campus that have different political opinions than they do, I hope you understand that while you're doing it, there are also people out there who are high school students at Santa Fe who actually do need some counseling, who are seeking help. They're the ones we should be focused on. You guys over at Texas Tech University, we're laughing at you. We're laughing at you because you think you need to be coddled over the fact that people think differently than you. It's embarrassing. Like, I'm embarrassed for you. And that's me being an ally of yours. I'm trying to be an ally by protecting you from yourself. Welcome back to the Jason Rand Show. Thank you so much for tuning in. We are live in the Online Trading Academy studio on this Monday morning. I would love it if you would like us on Facebook, facebook.com/Jason Rantz Show. If you would go there right this second and hit the follow button and share some of our stuff and see what it is we look like. We're all incredibly handsome. And we would love it if you would join the conversation there. It's how you get the full immersive experience of the show. It's how we grow as a show. Because when you like our stuff, when you share my posts, other people who haven't heard of the show, they pay attention. They're alerted. That's how we grow. Facebook.com/Jason Rantz Show. Guess what? The Hutch is running for Senate. Can I call her the Hutch? Has anyone ever called her the Hutch? I feel like she might get mad at that. I think it's endearing.
I imagine maybe in high school or something.
Maybe. Now, the rumor was Susan Hutchison, former state GOP chairman, was going to be the ambassador to some country for the United States, some country I'd ask her to hook me up on flight deals with, and maybe I can stay at the ambassador's mansion.
Hungary was the rumor I heard.
Was Hungary? I'm going to Budapest in July. I could have just stopped by like, hey, Susan, hey, Hutch. But no, she's not doing that. She has announced she's running for Senate against Maria Cantwell, which I think means for the first time in a long time, we might actually have a race. Because we just got a text on the None Better Tax Resolution Hotline saying, I hope Joey Gibson wins. Joey Gibson is not going to win. He seems to concede that. I mean, it's always awkward when I tell him that. And there was a little bit of awkwardness when I told him that when he was on the show about a month and a half ago. He's not going to win. I'm not so certain that Cantwell is going to be that automatic winner up against a Susan Hutchison. It's still going to be tough for Susan Hutchison because the problem is Maria Cantwell does have high name recognition. But what's in Susan Hutchison's favor are a couple things, three things. She's well known, right? She's a little bit of a celebrity. She's got media savvy. And she's not a fringe candidate. She's a mainstream Republican candidate. And in announcing this race, and she'll be on the show, I'm assuming, this week, she gave an interview with the Seattle Times. She said, I've been just watching the situation. I think that a sitting senator who is known for doing nothing for us does not deserve a fourth term. She is a fake senator. She is a ghost in the state and in the Senate. And I think that's a relatively fair assessment. And we've had this conversation how many times on air? I talked to people who are supportive of Maria Cantwell, can't name a single policy win. What is she known for? I'll ask this again. What is she known for? I've been seeing a couple more tweets having to do with net neutrality. She's not the leading voice on net neutrality. I know that she signed on to some letter that said the Washington Redskins should change their name. That's not a winning policy. Do you know what she stands for? Legitimately, what are her wins? It's not to say she clearly has high name value, right? People know the name Maria Cantwell.
I mean, not as well as Patty Murray.
Yeah, but they know Cantwell. This is not a shock when you say Cantwell to someone. They're not like, wait, who? They know that she's a senator. It seems like it's bad branding if you have name recognition, but no one knows what you stand for. So what does she stand for? What's that one policy that she stands behind? I know Patty Murray's.
Do you? I don't know.
Yeah,
that one
Patty
either.
Murray's has to do everything with the budget. That's what Patty Murray's about. Budget, budget, budget. She's the one who is a leader within the Democratic caucus. She sat down with Paul Ryan a couple years ago on hammering out the budget details. I know that about her. Maria Cantwell, I have no clue. I'm assuming she's progressive. I don't know. I mean, I know more about freshman senators from California. I know more about Kamala Harris than I knew about Maria Cantwell.
Kamala Harris has a national profile. Cantwell doesn't.
Yeah, but she doesn't even have a statewide profile is my point. I'd love to hear from people. What does she stand for? I know that there are a lot of liberals out there who listen to this show. Thank you for that. Tell me what she stands for. Send me a text. 1-800-465-8770. 1-800-465-8770. Legitimately. No jokes. I know the jokes will come in. I want to know what she stands for. What is her issue? She doesn't do that many interviews with the media. Up until like a few weeks ago, I've never actually heard her speak. So what does she stand for? That we cannot answer that clearly seems to be bad news for her. Good news for the Hutch. Susan Hutchison. It's the Jason Rand Show. Welcome back to the Jason Rand Show. 1-800-465-8770 for your text messages on the None Better Tax Resolution Hotline. After any potentially avoidable tragedy, like the one in Santa Fe, Texas on Friday, particularly when it's gun-related, I often hear progressives say, now is the time to have conversations about preventing these kinds of tragedies. Now's the time. Stop the prayers. Enough with the prayers. Your prayers do nothing. Let's do something. Let's get some action. Only they don't actually want a conversation. They just want the action, and the only action they want is the one that they happen to be prescribing. Their solution to these types of things is simply to ban guns. They tell us they don't want to ban guns, but after a tragedy like on Friday, it's become clear that's exactly what they want. And a lot more of these voices, they're speaking up specifically saying, yeah, we want to ban guns. Now, Republicans in this case, they're coming to the table with some solutions. Now, some solutions are good. Some solutions are not. Some solutions are all right. But at least they're coming to the table with some solutions. They're the ones trying to have the conversation. Texas Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick suggested, as just an example, that we limit the amount of entrances to schools. We talked about this very topic over at the Freedom Series in Edmonds last month. But that's not a conversation progressives want to have. Found an article in the San Antonio Current, which I'm assuming is like their version of The Stranger. Seems like an alt-weekly. They have a columnist by the name of Sanford Nowlin. He decided to mock Dan Patrick's idea. In fact, in the article, he claimed Lieutenant Governor Patrick wants to, quote, ban doors, not guns. That's not what he said at all. He doesn't want to ban doors. That's a stupid, stupid, stupid insult. Here's what he said.
We may have to look at the design of our schools moving forward and retrofitting schools that are already built. And what I mean by that is there are too many entrances and too many exits to our over 8,000 campuses. In Texas, over 8,000 campuses. There aren't enough people to put a guard at every entrance and exit. You would be talking 25, 30, 40,000 people. But if we can protect a large office building or a courthouse or any major facility, maybe we need to look at limiting the entrance and the exits into our schools so that we can have law enforcement looking at the people who come in one or two entrances.
And yet this loser over at the San Antonio Current had the audacity to mock him for actually coming to the table with a viable solution. I know that this columnist wants to ban guns. That was the implication of his title. But you can't ban guns, okay? I'm not going to have that conversation with you because you cannot ban guns. We already know that. And usually the gun in question that you'd like to ban is the AR-15. I understand because he didn't use an AR-15 in this case, one of your talking points is a little bit limited. But let's be clear, you're not going to be able to ban all guns. So that's not coming to the table with any kind of solution. That's you being a crazy person. That's you being a fringe lunatic. So how about you sit this one out? Sanford Nowlin, you can sit this one out. Just go on the side there. Play in the sandbox over there with all the other little kids and let the adults actually start the conversation. If you're unwilling to hear anything beyond one particular quote-unquote solution, you are the problem. And you're the reason why nothing ever gets done. If your solution is the opposite of what the other side is willing to entertain, isn't it kind of on you to also come up with something else that maybe you'll find agreement on? And it seems to me like this is something we can find agreement on, and it's an incredibly cheap way to do it. One point of entry. If you have a school resource officer and you only have one, you put him or her right at that one point of entry. If you want to do the metal detectors, go for it. Go for it. If that's what you want to do, go for it. I'm not opposed to that.
We don't want to feel like we're prisoners in our own school.
Well, do you want to feel safe? And I, by the way, reject this whole idea of feeling like a prisoner. I don't feel like a prisoner when I go to an airport. I don't feel that way at all. And I go there with metal on me, right? I've got my keys. I've got my phone. Most kids are only coming with their phone and their keys. That's it. They move in. They move out. They feel a little bit safer or a lot more safe. That seems like a solution. It's a solution that Andrew Pollack has. One of them. Andrew Pollack is the father of the Parkland shooting victim, Meadow. He was on Fox News.
Well, it's a process. It can't just be one step. You know, there's layers of security. So you have to start with the security of being entry points. You got to have limited entry points. You need metal detectors and you need armed guards. It's really three layers of security to protect our kids.
What's wrong with that? Oh, it's not the solution you want, because you don't really want a solution. You just want to ban guns. You just happen to use what happened on Friday, what happened in Parkland. You just happen to use that as a means to push your ideological agenda, which is anti-Second Amendment, but you don't want to actually admit that that's what you're doing. Okay, cool. Got it. I just want to make sure we're all clear. Which is exactly why on Friday morning, the second sentence of CNN's piece covering the shooting indicated it was the 22nd school shooting. It is not. And then over the weekend and on Friday, you saw a whole bunch of memes saying there were 18 school shootings this year. So you're seeing these random statistics, some coming from media organizations that are legitimate like CNN, others just on a meme saying 18 school shootings. They're equally wrong. And it took, thankfully, a local anchor to point that out in Houston. Tiffany Craig, she works with KHOU. She says that 18 school shootings a year, no, it's not true.
Social media has been a buzz today with this. There are a couple of things to mention in here. The first one is this information that there were 18 school shootings in 2018. This number 18 is not mass shootings like what you're seeing today here in Santa Fe. These include smaller incidents that might be around the school or even suicides. And all of those numbers get pulled together and they're presented in a way like this that instills fear in some people. So this is a false piece of information and we want to let you know that.
It instills fear. And that's what CNN is doing. That's what these memes are doing. It wants you to feel like every single week we have a school shooting, which then will get you to be scared, which then will get you to ask your politicians, the folks who represent you, the lawmakers who represent you, to push anti-gun policies, because that's what CNN wants. And they mask it as some sort of legitimate news statistic. When you look at the actual list of school shootings, some on that list have no connection whatsoever to a student, to a parent, to a teacher or an administrator. In some cases, they open a rec room at night at a local high school to the community, and two people were there playing basketball. They get into a fight. One uses a gun to shoot the other person. They counted that as a school shooting. They had no other connection to the school whatsoever. Students weren't even there, but that's a school shooting. You have an errant bullet fired off campus that hit the wall of an off-campus private housing unit for students. They call that a school shooting. That is not a school shooting. How do I know this? Name a school shooting, Jacob.
From any decade or?
Any decade.
And Columbine's the first one.
AJ, name a school shooting.
Sandy Hook.
Okay. I would have said Stoneman Douglas. You know what the three of us didn't say and no one at home said? The middle school where there was a suicide outside of the school in the parking lot one evening in Philadelphia. No one said that. Why did no one say that? Why was it that we said Sandy Hook and Columbine and Stoneman Douglas? Because that's what we think when we say school shooting. CNN knows that. That's how they manipulate you. And they love to manipulate you. That's what really they're in the business of doing, right? In a way, all news organizations are like that. They want to get you to tune in, and so they have to manipulate you a little bit. And in this case, I think they're talking to a lot of people who they've already brought in with their new brand of being anti-Trump. I love the fact that the slogan for CNN now is facts first. And yet the second sentence of a breaking news story includes a lie. That's what CNN has become. This is CNN. A bunch of liars who are pushing their own agenda. And it's an anti-gun agenda. And you know what? If you're anti-gun, I'm okay with you being anti-gun. You get to have that position. Just don't lie and tell me you're a journalist. And don't lie and tell us all that you're pushing facts. They hate the president because the president lies. And yet they lie on a regular basis and they're okay with it. So Jason Rancho, if you want to join the conversation, 1-800-465-8770 now. Good morning, everybody. Welcome back to the Jason Rancho. Thank you so much for tuning in. Really do appreciate it. Breaking news, everybody. CEOs make more than the janitors at the companies the CEOs are in charge of. Isn't that shocking? I know. Whoa, I was shocked too, guys. I was really shocked too. I found this out thanks to an anti-Semitic congressman by the name of Keith Ellison. He's the Democrat who represents Minnesota. Not a big fan of the Jews, but he does appear to be a big fan of Louis Farrakhan. He released a study that found CEOs in the United States on average are paid 339 times more than their workers. So, I look at that and you know what I say? I want to be a CEO. I don't say, man, I want more money. He should make less. She should make less. I say, I want to be a CEO. Here's a question for you in coming up with that data point. We all agree that CEOs should make more than a janitor, yeah? Right? I think that that's fair. I think even the janitor will say yes. The janitor could want more money. Not saying that. But I think the janitor would generally agree that the CEO should make more than them. So should the front desk clerk. So should the barista. The mailroom dude. All people who should say to themselves, yeah, maybe I'd want more, but you know what? The CEO is worth way more to the company than I am. And if they are, should we be comparing the actual salary of a CEO to the actual salary of the lowest skilled, lowest wage workers at that company? Because understand that if the CEO screws up, you know what ends up happening to that barista or that front desk assistant or maybe that mailroom clerk? You know what happens? They lose their jobs, including the CEO sometimes. What happens if the mailroom clerk screws up? One time. What do you think happens? Sandy in accounting doesn't get the mail that she should have gotten that day. She gets it a little bit later. That's the consequence. The stakes are different. The stakes of a CEO, much different. The job skills that they bring, much different. Everything is different about a CEO and a janitor. And yet we are pretending that they shouldn't have a huge gap in wages. What happens when the CEO does really well? The company can earn millions and millions and millions of dollars. The money that goes into your benefits, the money that goes into the perks that you receive as someone on the job, the money that goes into reinvestment so that the business actually grows, the money that goes into the economy, which then pays for subsidies of people who are down on their luck and need a little bit of help. When a CEO does well, they make a ton of money, well more than what they're getting in salary, in perks, in benefits every single year. What happens when the mailroom clerk does the job well? You get that mail on time. Cool. According to this study, the CEO worker pay ratio is a dramatic indicator of our country's extreme economic divide. This will be the centerpiece of the next presidential election. That's what they're going to do, class warfare. Class warfare based on claims that lack all context. Because Keith Ellison, the anti-Semitic congressman from Minnesota, he is with the DNC. He is helping to define what the platform's going to be, what they're going to run on when they face against Donald Trump for his second term. This is what they're going to be pushing. And sometimes this kind of stuff works. I don't see it working on a national level. I see it working on a local level, right? But I see it working in those places where they didn't really need all that help. This is a message that will work in Seattle, right? Because Seattle is filled with progressives. Seattle is a city filled with people who are very much about supporting the union. Do you think this message works in parts of Texas or Florida or Oklahoma or South Dakota or North Dakota? I don't think so. It's something that hasn't even worked really in Wisconsin, which used to be a stronghold for unions. That's been weakened over time. But they're going to push this. Now, the analysis that he released found that at 219 of the 225 companies, an average employee would need to work more than 45 years to make what their CEO earns in 1 year. Okay, that makes sense to me. And I'm not jealous. I'm not jealous to the point where I need to be petty and selfish and get them to make less money so that I can make more. I use that as a means to work harder so I can make more money. And maybe that's just the way that I'm wired. I do that here. I write like 3 blogs a day. I don't have to. I don't get paid to do that. I do it because I think it's going to make me more valuable to the company. I stay later because I think it's going to make me more valuable here. And I've always been like that, and that's paid off for me. Talk to the person who's been stuck in their low-wage, low-skilled job for years and years and years. The barista who's 47 years old still works at Starbucks. Something tells me when you talk to them, not all of them, but a lot of them did not do extra work. How do I know that? Because I've had the conversations with these people. They're not bad people. They're not somehow worthless as human beings. They're just worth less than employees who do more. And we don't have that conversation anymore, do we? We want $15 now. Are you going to work a little bit harder for it? No, we want it now. Yeah, but you haven't changed any of your responsibilities. Now I want the $15. Yeah, but business hasn't changed. Now I want $15. Okay. You shouted loud enough. Here's your $15. Now what? Your jobs are going to robots. You didn't pick up any additional skills. You didn't pick up any additional education. So what's going to happen when I replace your job, your low-skill job, with a robot that never takes sick time, never takes vacations, over the long term ends up being free for me to use, doesn't complain, doesn't constantly nag the bosses, put out reports about how CEO makes more than me? What are you going to do when that happens? You're going to still put out another report that says the CEO makes more than you? Yeah, well, that CEO worked their tails off. All CEOs? No. Sometimes corruption puts CEOs in positions where they find themselves in. I'm happy if you want to go after the corrupt CEOs. I'm happy if you want to show me that and show the board of directors, show the stockholders, show them that the CEO shouldn't be making as much as they're making. That's cool. That's totally open game, right? Go for it. But stop telling me without any context, oh, well, a CEO shouldn't make so much more money than the janitor. What if that CEO brought in $1 billion into that company? You don't think they should make a bigger chunk of that? If you as a janitor brought in $1 billion worth of profits, you should probably make more than $15 an hour, and I'll join you in that fight. You get paid what you're worth on the market. You know how you know what you're worth? You ask for it and they give it to you. Then you're worth that. If they don't give it to you, you know what? You ain't worth it. It's the Jason Rance Show.